Hi, welcome to True Creeps, where the stories are true and the creeps are real. We'll cover stories from grotesque gore to the possibly plausible paranormal, to horrifying history, to tense and terrible true crime, and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, everybody. Today, we're going to be talking about an axe murder that occurred nearly 220 years ago, which just feels insane to say.
That's so long ago.
I know that in other places that are much older than America, they're like, that's nothing. But
fair.
It just feels so strange to say because we're talking about the 1800s.
Well, just to have any recollection of what happened that long ago is wild to me.
Yes. And that really is one of the most fascinating things about this case is that not only is it that we have like a clear picture, but it was in a rural place. So it's not like it was in a place where there was like lots and lots of news articles about it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason that there is such a clear picture is that the murderer, Abel Clemens, shared his story after he was in prison. But it's been a minute since we've done an axe murder as well. Just a casual minute.
Just a minute. Yeah, it's been a while. And it's sad that there's been so many, right? Like that's just a way to kill someone. Currently, you don't really see that very often because they're not used as frequently as they were back then.
Yeah, well, before there used to be just axes laying around in people's yards because they'd be chopping wood or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons why they were more prevalent then was because axes were just around.
Exactly. Still awful, though.
Agreed.
So she already said who we're going to be talking about, Abel Clemens. So let's talk about his early life first. He was born in Waterford, New Jersey, and he began working at a blacksmith when he was about 12 years old.
I can't even imagine what it would be like at 12 years old to be like, okay, and now you're going to learn a profession.
Right, and go to work. Yeah, much different.
Yes.
Sources say that he returned to his parents because of the blacksmith's disposition. So we're assuming that he must have been apprenticing or living with him, something like that. Clemens then went to work for a merchant that also abused him. Soon after, Clemens left the merchant and went back home because of the abuse. So he's had some bad run-ins already. His mother convinced him to go back, and then the abuse continued. Clemens, again, went back home. When he was 15, he, quote, embarked on a career of fornication and adultery, courtship and seduction.
Feels very dramatic.
Mm-hmm. And those are his words. Within the next few years, he was engaged to at least 7 women near his mother's home in Redstone, Pennsylvania.
That's a lot of engagements.
A lot of, like, not only obviously, like, seven people, that's so mean to do, right?
I'm exhausted even thinking about it.
But, like, trying to juggle 7 people just sounds exhausting. Yeah.
This also obviously predates the diamond engagement ring, because that would be an expensive pastime to be engaged to all sorts of women if you had to buy diamonds. Not that you have to buy a diamond now, but you get what I'm saying here.
Yeah. So one of the women was pregnant. Clemens later said that he actually would have married the fiance that was pregnant had his mother let him. So his mother's like, no. He was a minor, so she wouldn't consent, which, like, okay, makes sense, I guess.
Again, we're talking about like the late 1700s, early 1800s. So the idea that there was a child born out of wedlock and then marriage wasn't like a given, I thought was really fascinating.
That, and I mean, I don't know if she like knew that there was 7 of them, but like just insane.
7. I mean, like, what do you, like, I guess when he says that he embarked on a career, like that's the level of work he's putting in to juggle 7 young ladies. Because 7 people that you're juggling in a presumably monogamous culture.
Right.
That just sounds like a lot.
It does.
So after this point, Clemens moves to Clarksburg, West Virginia. And it's in that area that he meets a woman named Barbara Carpenter. And when he's 19 in 1794, he and Barbara get married. Soon after, Barbara gets pregnant. So she and Clemens move back to Redstone, Pennsylvania to live with Clemens' mother. While they were there, he farmed the land, and his mother kept a very close eye on him. Eventually, Clemens and his family, including his mom, they move back to Clarksburg. And once he gets back there, he starts cheating on Barbara again. So perhaps Clarksburg's not the best place for him. Then, in 1800, Clemens witnessed a meteor, and he took it as a sign from God, as one does, I guess. But I would imagine if you don't know what something is in the sky and people are like, it happened in the sky, it has to do with Sky Daddy. Okay, man. Sure.
Okay, yeah.
But he takes this as a sign from God that he is supposed to abandon his adultery. Okay, I mean, this sounds probably good. And by the end of his life, he claimed that he had been able to, quote, adhere strictly to not cheating on his wife. What do you want, like a fucking cookie? Like, congrats, you saw a meteor and stopped cheating on your wife. Wow, what a guy.
I didn't know meteors were so powerful.
Who knew? They could knock the cheating right out of you. But so Clemens would later report that from here on out, from 1800 on, after he saw his sign from God, he started to try to earn God's forgiveness, right? Because he'd been living a life that he would imagine God would probably not be too thrilled with before them. And he started attending church daily, which feels like a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
And I think it's at this point that you start to see that there's just something going on mentally with him, because he becomes what sounds like obsessed with religion. And he begins learning as much as he can about religion. And one person he spoke with, who he describes as a well-dressed stranger, came to Clarksburg to tell people about deism. And when the stranger was speaking, one of the things that they talked about a lot was the idea that every person who died, their soul was returned to God. And so in this realm of religious exploration, he is learning a lot about different Christian denominations. And he later will attribute his religious delusions to the fact that there's variations in doctrine between Christianity, which is wild.
So during this time, Clemens visited family in Miami, Ohio. So not Florida, Ohio. When we were researching, I was like, I've never heard of Miami, Ohio. And they even have like Miami University. And so if someone told me I went to Miami University, I'd be like, oh, you're from Florida. No, you're from Ohio.
Wrong.
Okay, sure. So while he was in this wonderful place in Ohio, he decided that him and his family should move there, which all of us have done, right? On vacation, we're like, we should really move here, like everywhere.
I mean, until my family proximity, yes. Now I'm like, the whole compound would have to move, you know? But yeah, I feel like it's always, I'll never come here again or I could live here. One of the two.
Yeah, exactly. No in between. As a note, today, with a car, it would have taken 4 hours to drive there from where he was. Per Google Maps, it would have taken 90 hours to walk there. So I can't imagine during this time it was an easy trip for them.
And the mode of transportation they would have been taking would have been a wagon with oxen.
Obviously, back then, there wasn't like freeways and lots of streets and things like that. And they're in a wagon. So, you know, going through whatever. So just like even thinking about using like maps and things to get from like one state to another without roads or like anything being labeled, that's crazy to me. Also, I can't even get anywhere with a fucking map now. So
if given a few minutes to acclimate, I could probably be fine. But if someone's like, here's a map, guide me, I'd be like, this is a bad idea for you and I.
I'm very good at if someone says it's by this and I know where, you know, specific things are.
I do good with landmarks, too.
Yeah. Some of the like GPS apps and stuff are now saying it's by this or make a right at this bank or whatever. And I'm like, yes, that's the type of thing I need.
I would love if GPS could have a feature for what's just the easiest, most chill route. It doesn't need to be the fastest. I just want to stress the least amount. So it's like, do you want to get there faster? We can cut 5 minutes off your trip. And I'm like, theoretically, yes. And it's like, okay, we've added 17 turns. They're all, half of these are left. Some of them have intersections where there's inexplicably 5 places you could go. I'm like, don't give me that.
Right.
Just give me an easy route. I'll take an extra 10 minutes if it's not stressful.
It depends. Depends on the day. But anyways, back to Clemens. So in the summer of 1805, he and his landlord, Colonel Jackson, entered into an agreement for Clemens to sell Colonel Jackson his crops, right? So he's growing things. He's selling it. At this time, Barbara and Clemens had 8 children. The oldest was 12.
It's a lot of kids.
So let's talk about his kids. He had Elijah, Hester, Rachel, Mary, Elizabeth, Benjamin, Parthenia. I think I'm saying that right.
I think so. I love that.
All right. That's a cool name. Amos. And again, Barbara was pregnant too at this time. So there's another one on the way. So as their moving day got closer, Clemens grew less and less confident. For starters, he thought his mother would move with him and his family, but she refused. She was like, I'm not going to Miami.
Fair. And at this point, she's already moved from Redstone to Clarksburg with him.
Mm-hmm. And the thought of moving in general, even nowadays, is like a no for me. Like, it's just so hard.
Yeah.
But moving back then, no, absolutely not. So Barbara was far along in her pregnancy, and he had heard rumors that pregnancy was fatal in Miami, Ohio.
How angry would you be if you, one, had 8 children under the age of 12, including an infant, were very pregnant, and then your husband's like, you know, we should move to a different state via wagon with oxen.
Goodbye, have fun.
Sir, I'm not doing this. Like, it's a hard fucking no. Like, I would just be so perplexed as to why they would think it would be a good idea.
Right, right. There's no reason it would be, at that time at least.
When you're thinking of, like, all of these facts, it feels weird, right? Like, it doesn't logically make sense, because at this point, it's the end of summer. He's selling his crops. He's planning on moving after it's starting to get cold. So you're planning to make this journey with 8 children in a wagon with a woman who's incredibly pregnant. I could see why he was like, I thought my mom was going to come because she could help with the infant. But like, what if your wife went into labor during the journey? What would you do?
Right. And she's like, I don't want to deal with that. No one wants to deal with that. 8 children on a long drive somewhere? No.
Yeah. I mean, fucking fair. They can't even have screens to like distract themselves. They're simply in the back of the wagon.
When are we going to get there?
In fucking surround sound. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I'm hungry. Do we have any more biscuits? Do we have any more salted meat or whatever the fuck you bring in a wagon? Like, no. No.
So his mother, obviously, kept trying to convince him to stay. Also, Barbara did not want to move. He was so stressed that he went to Colonel Jackson to undo their deal. Clemens agreed to return the money for the crop and then took a 3-year lease on the farm. Clemens said, quote, I repented my bargain immediately. I had not walked 20 steps until I was struck with an unaccountable horror. I know not the reason, but such is the fact that from that moment, I never enjoyed a moment's pleasure.
Interesting.
So Clemens thought by not moving to Ohio that he was acting contrary to God's will. This is when he first began thinking of killing himself and his family.
It just feels like such a bizarre jump.
Does this not really, in a way, remind you of kind of like Lori Vallow, where they're like, you have to be in Idaho. Like, this is where all of it'll go down.
Yeah, it reminds me of a little bit of John List. It's just such an interesting thing that he's like, oh, if we can't go to Ohio, then I'm going against God's will and he's going to be unhappy with me, so I should kill my children. So Clemens' mental state begins to rapidly deteriorate. He attributed this to God punishing him for going against his will because he didn't move to Ohio. So then Clemens went to Colonel Jackson a fucking again to get out of this deal. And I don't think it's altogether surprising that Colonel Jackson refused to renegotiate with him and then told him that he was being childish. Because, I mean, I feel like you're going back and forth. These are land deals. You can't just be going back and forth being whimsy. But so then he continues to get even worse. So his mother threatens to have him confined, which we're at the 1800s. We can assume that any mental health facilities are not good.
Right. Exactly.
Moo is snoring very loudly, as always. She's an ever-present member of True Creeps and her snores. So at this point, he is, one, convinced God hates him for not moving to Ohio and because of who he was when he was younger. And then, two, he's now worried that he's going to get confined or sent to some sort of like mental health facility. Obviously, that's not what they're calling it. And he really starts to worry about whether he can provide for his family. So he's still considering whether murdering his children will be better for them. And the reason why he's thinking about this is because he's thinking in his head, I can't support all of them, especially if I go to a mental health place. Again, not what they're calling it, but he's like, I am having a hard time with money now. It'll be even worse if I go to a mental health facility. Oh gosh, are they going to have to live the life that I did? Because remember, when he was an adolescent, he was sent to work for the blacksmith and the merchant, and he suffered severe abuse.
Right.
And so he's terrified that that's what's going to become of his children.
That's sad.
And so he starts thinking like maybe they'll just be better off because then they'll just go to God, right? We'll all just meet back up afterwards. And so he would later talk about how he would have this kind of thought process, and then he would get to the how to do it, right? Because he would have to kill his children. And when he would get to that part, he would just be horrified. But over time, that starts to wear down a bit, and he does start to think about it.
It's terrifying.
Exactly. Clemens was able to make a deal with another man to purchase his crops and to take over the lease from the land. And for a brief time, he was mentally better. But then he began to decline even more. He started talking to himself. He became more absent-minded. Barbara had been pretty chill throughout this, but she was just at her fucking limit. And so she says to him, "You're more sinful than you've ever been." That does not help anything.
Right.
So he sells the crop. He's preparing their journey to Miami, Ohio, a fucking again. And he begins to obsess even more about whether he had, quote, sinned away his days of grace. So like, is he redeemable in God's eyes in any way, no matter what he does? He begins to lose joy in things that he once liked, like hanging out with his kids and wife. But he still describes them as, quote, so many celestial beings. So he's seeing them as like going with God already.
Yeah.
And this is when he begins to really plan out the murders, and he decides that he'll kill them with an axe and then take his own life.
Brutal, horrible way too.
Yes. Yes.
So just to paint a picture of where Clemens was mentally, he and his brother had traded wagons, but very soon after, Clemens regretted his decision, which it sounds like he's doing this a lot, right? Like he's making a decision and then immediately after wanting to change it.
It sounds exhausting.
Yes. So to switch them back, he woke his son up at midnight. He hitched the oxen to the wagon, and he and his son set off on a 10-mile ride to his brother's house. Sources vary in how fast oxen pulls wagons and how fast they can travel, but going off of what we saw, it's anywhere from 1 mile per hour to about 3 miles per hour. So we're just going to assume two, right? Right in the middle. So this should theoretically be a 5-hour commute that he began just after midnight. So getting there around 5 a.m. So during this trip, Clemens was repeatedly, quote unquote, drawn off the road, quote, by a guide unseen, unheard, though irresistible.
Don't like it.
Ugh, that's creepy. Okay. So because of the weird detours, it took him and his son over 24 hours to get to his brother's house. Remember, it should have been about 5. When he saw his wife after this, his biggest concern was whether any law enforcement had been to their house, which that sounds very weird, right?
So fucking weird. Like, it's so suspicious. Why is that what you're worried about? Also, can you imagine being his poor son and you're asleep? Your father wakes you in what I could only imagine was like a frenzy and is like, we gotta go. There's no part of me that thinks that they packed any type of provisions like food or water. So like just this strange trip that didn't need to happen right then at all.
And then for it to take forever.
Yes. He's like, it's midnight. We better go fucking trade these wagons. There's no reason for him to need to do the trade immediately.
Right. Right.
It's just so fucking weird. And like, what was he so worried about, like law enforcement seeing in their house? Like what was in there?
Right. And why would they be there? Like, why would they just stop by and go, hey, we're here?
I think like the idea was like, oh, because he was missing technically and their son was missing. But I think that what was in their house that would have been damning for him, because his murder weapon was like
a common thing,
an axe. And that is what he planned. So like it would make sense that it'd be around unless he had some sort of like rambling writings somewhere.
Yeah.
But I didn't see anything about that. It was just more like, what are you so worried about?
He's mentally not doing well. So Clemens had attempted to murder his family dozens of times. One instance, Barbara woke up and she had asked him what he was doing up. And he told her that he was, quote, admiring her beauties while sleeping.
Immediate red flag. If Ben was standing over the bed watching me sleep and said to me, I'm just admiring your beauties, you're going to kill me. That's the only thing that I would think. That's the only place I would go. Also, the idea of the plural beauties, really, it gives it a little extra.
It's creepy. It's just creepy. Yeah. Yeah. And no one looks good sleeping, by the way.
No. No. Would you not also be like, what the fuck are you talking about? I feel like I would be defensive immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. There'd be a lock on the door. You could go sleep outside. So another time, Barbara actually woke up at the perfect moment because he had the axe in hand and he immediately like threw it to the side so she wouldn't see it. And that's just terrifying. And I feel like, how would she not notice? Right? Like, this big thing, it'll make a big sound when you throw it anywhere, unless like maybe on a bed or something. But I don't think that that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, also, like, we're talking again, 1800s. It's not as though they had like lush carpeting in the room.
Right, right. It would have made like a clunk sound.
Like a nice upholstered chair that they could have lessened the sound. He could have been like, oh, I don't know what that was. But like, it's going to make an axe hitting wood sound, I would imagine.
Yes, yes. He's like, nothing to see here. So at this time, he swore to himself that he wouldn't actually kill his family. Later, Clemens would say that he was, quote, restrained from the vow by an invisible and irresistible impulse.
What a way with words. So the day of the murders was either November 8th or 10th of 1805. Sources vary on the date. But let's talk about what happened on the day of the murders. Earlier that day, Barbara was singing hymns and she asked Clemens to join in, but he refused. Which again, like, he's super religious at this point. So he is like, fuck yes, God. So this is like a little bit bizarre. It's another example of him not doing things he would normally enjoy. Mm-hmm. Then Barbara's like, hey, I'm going to go to your mom's house. Do you want to go? And he's like, I do not want to go. She eventually convinces him and he goes, but he doesn't really want to. As soon as they get there, he is unhappy about being there. And he wants to leave, but Barbara and his mother are like, no, stay, stay. So he does. So then after a bit, Clemens and Barbara return home, but his mother, his sister, and his brother-in-law also come back to their house with them.
There's a lot of people in this house.
It's a lot of people in this house, especially because like, there's like all the children as well, right?
Yes, yes.
So then they're like, you know what we're going to do again? We're going to fucking sing some motherfucking hymns. So they're singing hymns again. And they're like, Abel, join in. And he's like, I do not want to. And they're like, come on. So he does, but he's like, he's not meaning it, you know? Mm-hmm. He's like clearly not having a good time. So about 9 p.m., his mother, sister, and brother-in-law, they head out, and Barbara walks them part of the way back and then heads home, and she goes to bed. A lot of the information we have is from Clemens, from his story that he shares while he's in prison. Somebody else writes it. We'll talk about that more later, but some of the details we have here are from that. So it's this day that things come to a head because he's like, my mental condition is getting worse, and he knew that if he could feel it, that his family could too. Mm-hmm. And he was really sure that if he didn't act soon, that he might lose his opportunity to do what he felt like needed to be done, because he thought that, again, they were going to send him to a, quote, madhouse. That's what he called it. He then really ruminated on how hurt his family would be if he was torn from them.
They'd be fine.
Fuck off. This is where it starts to remind me of John List a bit, where he's like, you'd be better off dead than having to live a hard life. So at this point, he really believes that if they died, their souls would return to God.
But he wouldn't be with them, theoretically, if he was religious, if he killed his whole family and then himself.
Exactly. Exactly. So like, there's clearly like faults in this logic, even if you were like, I'm doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. So just talking a bit about the room where they were, everyone shared one bedroom and all of the beds were on the floor because they had sold the bed frames. Probably because of money, but also because they were planning on moving soon. And so there were three separate beds. There was one bed where Clemens and Barbara slept, and Barbara slept holding the baby, the infant. There were also four girls in another bed, and then two boys and one girl in the last. And so Clemens is in their bedroom, and he's laying on in his bed with Barbara, and he can't sleep. His brain's just going. So he gets up and he grabs a candle. And then he starts to fashion his noose because that's how he planned on taking his own life. So then he got the axe and he was like about to, but he just couldn't. So he's about to put the axe down when the same force that had pulled him to take the weird detours to his brother's house comes back. And it's then that he takes the axe and he begins to murder his family one by one. He recounted that everyone died easy except two of his daughters, Betsy and Parthenia, which Betsy, I'm presuming, is Elizabeth. He said that after they stopped fighting, he moved their bodies so that they were straight. So they basically looked like they were sleeping. And then he put their hands together. And this way they looked like everyone else, like they had been killed in their sleep peacefully-ish.
Horrific.
So fucked. Just so fucked that like his little girls were fighting him and he still did it.
Ugh, that's so sad. That's just horrific to think about. So immediately after he kills everyone, he, quote, felt alive to the impropriety of my conduct and the enormity of a crime.
Get fucked.
Fuck this guy. Yeah, what a Right.
How disgusting. Like, and I'm just thinking too, how long it probably took. There's eight kids and your pregnant wife. It's disgusting. So.
And the baby in her arms.
Mm-hmm. So he said the invisible force kept him from killing himself, although he wanted to. He went and sat by the fire and talked to his niece, who was there for all of this somehow, which, what? Clemens told her, quote, to be obedient to her parents and strive to obtain Christianity.
Sir, I don't think that you're in the best place to give anyone advice on how to live.
No. And also, like, you're not following Christianity either. You know, like, none of this makes sense.
I think at this point, he's still, like, in his delusion of, like, warped religious, like, servitude. Like, he's like, I was doing this for God. Wild.
So, the day after the murder, a man who purchased part of his crop stopped by early in the day. His name was Knisley. Clemens let Knisley into his home, and he told him that everyone except for his niece who was visiting was asleep. She had stayed the night and was unaware that her aunt and cousins had been murdered. Which is strange, because, like, it's early in the day. You would think that at least one of the children would have been up by then, right? There's eight of them.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think this stuff about his niece is one of the strangest things about this. How would she not hear it?
Yeah, that. And I mean, even if she slept through it, because some people can sleep through anything, that morning in a home with eight children, there's going to be someone awake very early.
Exactly, exactly. And we'll talk more about his cabin later. But yeah.
Yeah. So Knisley chatted with Clemens for a bit and did not suspect that there was anything wrong. Just everything was fine. Nothing was weird. Clemens' brother Isaac lived relatively close. And it's unclear whether this is the same brother that the weird wagon trade happened with. I'm assuming that either, if it is, he moved close by, or, you know, there's another brother. But he doesn't really define which brother it is, or if he had more. Well, anyways, Isaac stopped by and he asked about the family. Again, Clemens was like, ah, they're asleep. So then Isaac went in to wake up his eldest nephew. And that's when he found the children and his sister-in-law had been murdered. The youngest child, who was just an infant, was in Clemens' wife's arms still. So she was still holding the baby. So sources vary a bit as to what happened next. Some sources say that Isaac then accused Clemens of killing his family and then went to the neighbor's house to alert them. Other sources say that Isaac gathered members of their family and that both Isaac and their mother urged Clemens to run, which is very different things that might have happened.
Right?
His mother begged him not to hurt himself, which, like, ugh. Can you imagine, like, the loss she just felt to all of her grandkids? From him, at least. Ugh.
Right? And it very much seemed as though she was close with Barbara as well.
Yes, yes. So Clemens left and wandered into the neighboring woods and hid in a cliff of rocks near a B&O station, which was north of the town. He recalled that he tried to attempt suicide several times during this time. Eventually, he came out because he was starving and had, quote, tortured feelings, which,
poor fucking you.
I don't care. Like, I feel nothing for this man. He's a terrible person. When he came out, he went back to his mother's house and his family arranged for his arrest.
Love that for him. So on November 28th of 1805, Clemens was arraigned and charged with murdering his wife and children. Against all odds, he pled not guilty.
Fuck him.
So he was sent to Morgantown for trial, and he was found guilty and eventually hanged in 1806. After his conviction, but obviously before he was hanged, Clemens had frequent visits from ministers and laymen for spiritual guidance while he was in jail. And one of these visitors is the one who transcribed his life story and the story of what he had done to his family that exists now.
I would not want to be that person, you know, like hearing all the details of it.
I wouldn't either, but I would also want to know. Because, I mean, at this time, they don't know why people do things, right? It's like,
that's true.
He, quote unquote, has madness. And like, what the fuck does that mean? Just an interesting point here is at this point in time, insanity was not something that was considered in judicial proceedings. So like, it's not as though he could use it as a defense or use it in his plea.
Right, right.
It's just interesting how much we know about this case because of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Typically, when we talk about older cases, we'll look into whether there are any stories about hauntings in the location. I mean, kind of similar to how we did for Villisca, right? Like, we talked about the terrible things that happened, but also then what people reported at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And for this, it's really, really difficult because, not surprisingly, Clarksburg looks very different than it did in the 1800s.
When the Clemens lived there, there was just about 200 people. And today there's almost 16,000.
Yeah, so much different.
Much different. And it's also incredibly developed. Like, it's like a city. And so the Clemens cabin was located between Pike Street and Philippi Road. I spent a significant amount of time looking at Google Maps, trying to go up and down Pike Street, because there's two different ones that exist in Clarksburg, and looking at maps at where the B&O station would be. And so we have a general idea of where we think the cabin would have been. But what's unfortunate is that, well, one, we don't have an exact location, but two, we don't really have a layout of what that cabin looked like, because I have those questions of how did the niece not know? Where was she? Because when you think cabin, that's going to be a relatively small space.
Right. And if they all slept in one room, if there's another room, why would they all pile into one?
Exactly. It looks like where the cabin would be in what is today the historic district of Clarksburg, near where the Clarksburg Harrison Public Library current is. We looked to see if there were any hauntings that were reported in the library, and we didn't see anything, but it does look like they have ghost story events there. So it could be that they just aren't something you can find online.
Or the story might not be popular there. There's so much history in each of these old areas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, like you said, to determine where exactly something took place. They may not even know.
Exactly. And it's not as though there's always property records that are easily discernible today. It could be that if I went to town hall, I could find information. But again, difficult to find. One of the things that I really wanted to see was if we could see the cliffs where he hid.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly difficult. One of the sources that we said the area where he hid is still known as Clemens Rock, but I couldn't find anything else that talked about that. And that article was from 100 years later, not from 200 years later, right? So it could have been that it was known by that for a while and then that went away.
Right.
There's a river that goes through the town. So we looked at the cliffs that come off of that river, because that's what's near the B&O station and through the woods. And so we couldn't find anything that talked about people associating it with Clemens or any paranormal activity that was happening in Clarksburg there. But very interesting. It's just really different compared to Villisca, for example. Again, I just use it because we actually had a layout of the cabin. We knew what it looked like.
Right. And they made it similar to how it was back then. So now it's very easy to see what the layout was.
Yes. Well, and that's also probably because it was about 100 years later. So it was much different. So just interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as always, we want to know, have you heard of the story before? Have you been to that area? Have you ever felt anything weird in that library? Message us if so.
Mm. Yes, we want to know.
And of course, we're only a couple weeks out before we take our spooky trip, right?
Mystery spooky trip.
And we're taking our Patreon along with us, right? We're going to be updating them and asking for their input as we're on this trip. We've been giving them clues on our Patreon page about where we're going. But we have multiple stops and we're stoked to tell them, which is coming soon. We're going to tell them soon.
Yes.
If you are curious about what's going on in our Patreon, head to our website, truecreeps.com, and we have a little button that says Patreon, and you can look at our tiers and what we're doing. It starts at only $1 if you want to join. It also includes access to our special Discord, as well as, depending on your tier, some goodies from us.
Yeah. I love our Discord server. I think it's a fun place to connect. And I think that it's a good group of folks and it's always fun conversations. And I love when people share what's going on in their lives.
Yes. That and whenever other people go to spooky places, too, I love discussing what they've learned. Or a couple months ago, a couple of them went to a Blair Witch event.
Yes, it was near me.
And I was obsessed. I was like, please tell me everything.
It sold out near me. I was devastated. I would have to say, though, my favorite recent thing that we've added, though, would be our pet channel.
Oh, yeah. I just actually sent last week some stickers for this year's sticker to our patrons that are Dump Ghosts and above.
Love it. I like this year's stickers. They're fun.
So, yeah. Hopefully everyone likes their sticker this year. Yeah, I thought that it made me laugh. I loved it.
Yeah.
Also, if you do want to score yourself a sticker, if you leave us a review on Apple iTunes, send us a screenshot with your address and we'd be happy to send you one.
Absolutely. And also, we've got a merch store. If you want a weird quote on a t-shirt, do you want to see the Basilosaurus on a t-shirt? Amanda made a beautiful rendition. It was on our episode Art for Topomancy, but there's Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, we'll have put it on a t-shirt because she's gorgeous. She's stunning.
And we actually recently just added a bunch more merch. So
yeah,
flipping through it now, I'm like, oh yeah, we did make that one. There's some that we've had for a while, but we've made it a little different. And honestly, my new favorite thing is our tote bag.
Yes, our tote bag is 10 out of 10. I'm very pleased with it. I'm excited for mine to come in.
Oh yeah, we just also did a big order because we want this too.
Yeah, we were like, we also need True Creeps merch. Yeah, I fucking love it.
And I cannot get over the Everlasting Faint t-shirt picture because it's like a guy wearing it with a DeLorean. It's so random, but I love it.
Yeah, it's like, it's fashion. Just fashion, baby.
You too could be fashionable.
You too could be an Everlasting Faintly Fashionable.
I need someone to have this shirt. And then when they finally see a DeLorean, I know there's a bunch in some of like the car museums and stuff. They need to recreate this picture for me. And then we'll put that on our site instead.
Yeah, because I like when you said when you finally see a DeLorean, like everyone's going to encounter a DeLorean in their lifetime. Like it's inevitable.
I feel like I've encountered a lot and I'm not even looking for them.
I think you might be.
No, no. Mike's obsessed with them. I'm not.
But... Oh, okay. Okay. That's your DeLorean in. Okay. Heard. Heard.
Yeah. 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 No, we go to a lot of car museums and he seeks them out. Or honestly, Comic Cons and stuff. They have them sometimes.
I mean, I've seen them because of Comic Cons and things like that.
See?
Yes. But again, I just don't think it's a universal experience.
Please go recreate this next time.
Yes. Yes. Honestly, or not even with a DeLorean. I want to see it with your Honda Civic. I want to see it.
Honestly, same thing in my eyes. Like any silver old car.
If you haven't seen this photo, we'll put it up on our social media. But like, it's just such a good like mock-up photo because it's like this man's in like a linen suit with a t-shirt. It's funny. It's funny. You'll see it. You'll know what we mean. Anyway, with that, have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us.
Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you.
Still, like, it's against his book, right? Like,
it's against his book. He wrote it. I just like, I like your attitude. It's a real ass the ice vibe.
Well, it is though to me.
I will take this moment to say hello to some pets as I'm scrolling through.
Yeah, anything with a pet channel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got, okay, who do we have? Who do we have? We've got Bubba Boy Mercury, Astra, Ivar. Then we've got Miles A. Poos, Xena Warrior Pooch. Who else do we have? Of course, our animals are in there, but you hear about them enough. Then who else do we have? We have Whiskey. Very cute. Love these eyes. One that just is called This Butt, but I don't know what their name is. Tobin's McGuire, Zool, the Void Cat, Lieutenant Reginald Barkley.
These names are fantastic.
I just fucking love the way people love animals' names. Okay, the butt described earlier is Orion the cat, then Bindi the dog, and Arlo the horse. But like, we want to know your pets, you know? All pet pictures, all the time.